Chapter 14. The Nature and Activity of the All. In chapters 9 to 12, we discussed the first 30 verses of the fifth book of the Corpus Hermeticum. For the time being, we will not discuss the other verses because we think the remaining text is easy to understand. Let us now turn to the sixth book of Hermes Trismegistus, the general dialogue between Hermes and Aesculapius. Aesculapius, or Aesculapius, was in ancient times the god of medicine. So in a broader sense, Aesculapius is the helper, the healer. In this dialogue, Hermes teaches a pupil who, as appears from his name, knows that he is called to follow the path of service to the Gnosis to be able to cooperate in healing diseased mankind, to raise what has fallen, and to repair what has been broken. In the sixth Hermetic book, Aesculapius is given a thorough introduction to the nature of motion, to the cause and method of the motion of the all. The Hermetic philosophy, as you will have seen, always develops its arguments from a very elementary beginning, as a basis, and then proceeds to what is highly abstract. One who uses this key and never deviates from it will always be able, step by step, to think it through and finally understand what should be understood. Many people are in the habit of beginning their thinking processes with the abstract, the unknowable, and trying from there to understand the concrete. Such a method of thinking can never be satisfactory, but will lead to speculation and mystification. For instance, the mystic often says that this or that should be done. In most cases, the reason remains vague, and this often results in either denial or acceptance of things on authority. It is claimed that the Bible is the Word of God and that not a single part of it can be disavowed. But no one knows why the Bible in particular is the Word of God. The result is that one accepts on authority what another denies, while a third neither accepts nor rejects, but is totally indifferent. Obviously, this method of thinking does not in any way serve the truth, and in place of it vagueness, lies and severe conflict arise. The Hermetic method of thinking is the only safe and correct one because it guides our thinking from the knowable, the facts, to the abstract. That is why the archgnosis has always applied this method. All who hunger and yearn for liberation receive this method because it yields the purest result. You will always be able to judge from a person's manner of thinking whether or not he is a real seeker of truth. In the Netherlands, an example of this was Benedictus de Spinoza, who without doubt applied the Hermetic method of thinking. After this introduction, let us now consider the text and understand the beginning, which is simplicity itself. All that is moved in and by something. The thing in which something is moved is greater than the thing moved. What causes movement is stronger than what is moved. And let us take the body as an example. It has the ability to move. It moves in and through a space, and there is a force which causes this movement. Consequently, the space in which the body moves is larger than the body itself. Also, the force which moves the body is greater, more powerful than the inertia of the body. This will be obvious to everyone. So according to verse 4, the substance in which and through which the body moves must be of an opposite nature. The body is a form that is crystallized to a greater or lesser extent. It is inert and dense, while the space through which it moves is subtle, light, and transparent. The force by which it moves has the same signature. That is why the philosophy of the Golden Rosicross says that our world order is moved by opposites, that it is dialectical. The sixth book of the Corpus Hermeticum indicates that thousands of years ago the same idea was conveyed to seekers of the truth. If you understand this, we will go one step further. Hermes, is this universe not greater than any other body? Aesculapius, yes, certainly. Hermes, and is it not entirely filled with many other great bodies, or rather, with all the bodies that exist? Aesculapius, it is so, Hermes, Thus, the universe is a body. Asclepius: Yes, certainly. Hermes: And it is a body that is moved. Asclepius: Yes, certainly. Hermes: Of what size then must be the space in which the universe is moved, and of what kind? Must it not be far greater than the universe in order to allow continuous movement, without the universe becoming oppressed and so stopping its motion? Asclepius: Immensely vast must be that space, Zero Trismegistus. Hermes: Is it not of an opposite nature, Asclepius? The opposite of the nature of the body is the incorporeal. Asclepius: Undoubtedly. So all existing bodies together form one body, the universe. Here every body has a space around it and a force by which it can move. The nature of space and force, on the one hand, and that of the body on the other, are opposed to one another. One may conclude that all bodies, which in essence form one large body, possess these two natures of opposites. Since all bodies, although essentially forming one large body, differ from one another, we might say that there is a billionfold variety of natures, and so an immeasurable range of opposites that move the entire all. The entire all manifestation might be called the body in which these countless natures manifest themselves. We all have a body and move through a space, a special life field, which is the force that moves us. Although we as human beings form one life system, although we belong to one and the same planetary body, it can hardly be maintained that we are of one and the same nature. No, our natures are very different from one another. As we said before, an immeasurable range of opposites moves the entire all. So the entire all manifestation can be called the body in which these countless human natures manifest themselves. However, this immense body of the all manifestation and all the cosmic domains of which it is composed are moved in and by something. Following the thought process outlined above, unavoidably, leads one to this conclusion. Following the same process, one can also gain some idea of the tremendous space in which the all manifestation moves, a space which must necessarily be of an opposite nature. Hence the conclusion of the sixth Hermetic book, which states that the all-encompassing space in which and by which the all manifestation is moved is the incorporeal. This opposite nature of the all may be studied to a certain extent. In view of the above, one must conclude that the material, in its infinite variety, must be surrounded and bounded by the immaterial, the incorporeal. The corporeal can be accounted for only by the incorporeal. Or in the words of Hermes, what has been created is generated by what has not been created. And Hermes refers to what has not been created, to what encloses, permeates, and moves everything, as divine or as God. However, we should not see what is all enclosing merely in terms of space. In our life system, we distinguish between space and bodies. The billionfold variety of all that has been created is surrounded by something that can no longer be called space, but sheer force. That is why one should not speak, as astronomy does, of infinite space, but should realize that space itself is encircled by force. This all-embracing force is God. The divine force is the immovable, the unknowable, the intangible, and also the inconceivable. By means of the Hermetic method of thinking, we may determine the nature of God and speak of it as the source from which everything originates. But we should never make the mistake of trying to find God in bodily space, because He is most definitely not there. We can at best find the divine, that is, the activity of the divine force, in physical space, in the various cosmic domains. God Himself is the all-surrounding force field by which the vast space is embraced. Any activity can always be defined and described, and is therefore always limited. So one must conclude that ultimately, everything that is moved does not move in something that is moved itself, but in something that is immovable. The motive force itself is also immovable, because it cannot participate in the movement it causes. Following the classical Rosicross, we too speak in our philosophy of the immovable kingdom. Hermes expressed this very clearly in verses 13-14. When we now consider universal space, we perceive it not as space, but as God. And if, for our thinking, space appears as God, it is no longer space in the customary sense of the word, but the effective power of God which embraces everything. All that is moved does not move in something that is moved itself, but in something that is immovable. The motive force itself is also immovable because it cannot take part in the movement it causes. The divine may exist in the overall motion of things, but God himself is the source of power from whose immobility the divine activity originates. A truly enlightened pupil of the Gnosis can manifest himself in the divine, but he can never be God himself as long as he has not reached the end of the long way back, the good end, as it is called. So we see again that there is a workshop, a space filled with bodies, where divine activity can develop. However, this activity must not and cannot be called God, for God himself recedes from us into the unknowable, which is nevertheless all-encompassing. By means of this hermetic logic, we can know in the abstract who, what, and where God is. To a certain extent, we can determine his nature, we can discover his activity, but it is impossible to know him in deepest reality as long as the sonship, the good end, has not been achieved. That is why the Bible states, "No one has ever seen God. It is only the Son who is in the Father's heart who has revealed him to us." The Father's heart is the radiation of. See Volume 1, First Book, Pymander, verse 65. Love, the second ray of the seven spirit which emanates from the source. He who awakens to divine activity in that love is a child of God, a son of God. He has then become an activity of God. The divine powers are freed in him, and a powerful motion develops. He who stands in this activity knows God and can interpret him, as Hermes Trismegistus does in his sixth book.
If you have followed this line of reasoning so far, a problem may have occurred to you, which is formulated by Asclepius in verse 1-5. We will try to fathom this problem in the next chapter. Briefly summarizing our introduction to the sixth Hermetic book, we find there is an all-encompassing source of power that encloses all domains of the cosmos. It must be possible to obtain a link with this source, and it seems to be a logical necessity. The aim of the sixth book is to convince us of this. It is not the aim to provide an in-depth philosophical treatise regarding the nature of God or the activity of the divine power. The only aim is to explain to the pupil, Asclepius, who has realized to what a sublime task man is called for God's sake, and who tries in surrender and devotion to follow the path of the Gnosis, that he is to make that link. Our insignificant existence as an unconscious being of nature on Mother Earth is the most illogical phenomenon in the whole all manifestation. He who is linked with the radiations of the source of power will be sanctified, healed by the miracle of the grace of his healing. He will in turn become a healer in the service of the Gnosis. He will become a mature Asclepius. The sixth book appeals above all to your insight, to your inner thinking. You are not only asked to listen, but also to participate in thinking and descending into the depths of your inner being where, in serene tranquility and silence, the eternal call of man's true vocation in life can be heard and understood.